The Unexplained with Howard Hughes on Talk Radio. The Unexplained Howard Hughes Sunday Night Talk Radio. Of course, the lead item in the news, not only my news, but also the national news since Friday and across the weekend, has been this massive hack that some of the media is calling the NHS hack. And that is not, as we're about to hear, technically correct, because this is some ransomware that has been affecting people around the world. Currently, around about 200,000 upwards, we are told by the boss of Europol today. That's a European policing organization. Many hospital trusts, about 70 of them affected also across this weekend, and they are working very hard to try and put this thing right. But of course, what they're saying now is that when you go into work tomorrow morning, fire up your computer wherever you happen to be, you might well find that you too have got that frozen message on your screen saying pay $300 or you don't get your files back. Big concern. So this hour, we're going to give most of it up to talking around this. First up with Fevzi Turkalp, the gadget detective, technology expert. Then cybersecurity expert Matthew Hickey will be on. And then at the back end of this, somebody who's been on this show before, a reformed hacker, a man who knows the ins and outs of groups like Anonymous, Greg Hausch in the United States will be here. First up, Fevzi Turkalp, the gadget detective. Fevzi, thank you for giving up part of your Sunday to do this. This is a major concern still, isn't it?
Yeah, it's an ongoing problem. So obviously it was first determined that there was a problem on Friday. A lot of systems went down. Initially it was thought it was specifically an attack targeted at our NHS. Then it became clear that other organisations across the UK and around the world were affected, and we by no means were unique in that. And the problem is that it will continue to ripple through people's machines for quite some time. IT departments in larger organisations, including of course the NHS, have been hard at work over the weekend to try and purge their systems and restart them in a clean form, and to patch the vulnerability that has allowed these machines to be hacked. So many people will be safe for, say, switch on, but for other people, if they don't have that sort of IT support, will still be vulnerable.
Well, I was working on a news desk yesterday, Fevzi, in one part of the country, and the information being put out by different healthcare trusts about how they've been affected varies. Some trusts were being very specific about how they've been affected. Perhaps, of course, they don't know. And other trusts were a little more vague, just saying that some of our systems have been affected, but business goes on and we're going to be working to put this right. How do you feel about the flow of information to the public? Let's just talk about the NHS side of it first. How do you feel about the information that we've been given? Is it adequate?
I think it was adequate in as far as you say, the cause and the full effect of it probably wasn't well understood through most of Friday. So yes, I think that in that point, from that point of view, it was okay. What was not adequate and what is not adequate is the fact that organisations who hold such sensitive information and where our lives actually depend upon their systems working properly, quite literally, do not have adequate measures in place to keep their systems up to date. They are running, a minister today admitted that 5% of the NHS's computers are running Windows XP. That's appalling. That's thousands and thousands of machines. Now, just to put that in some sort of context, Windows XP was launched 16 years ago. It hasn't been supported by Microsoft in any mainstream fashion for 3 years, since April 2014.
But this is a grey area, isn't it? Because we were told at the time that certain key organisations, including government departments and the NHS, would pay Microsoft extra money to get special extensions on the support.
Exactly so, and for large organisations such as banks, for example, where a lot of ATMs still running Windows XP.
Really?
Yes, so obviously they pay for patches. So it's not that Microsoft don't produce the patches, it's that they're no longer free, and that's what I was alluding to when I mentioned mainstream updates. Yes, they can pay for them, and clearly at least some parts of the NHS have not been paying for them or have not been applying them. A better solution would be to update their operating systems and machines altogether. Obviously, there is a cost involved in that. But, let me say to you, for example, Windows 10 was not affected by this at all. because it was an intrinsically more secure piece of software. For all the other problems, you know, we've had from Windows 10, you know, security tends not to be one of them. So they really should have, because if you think about this, at the moment, this particular attack, which uses this sort of WannaCry attack vector, and we'll come perhaps to where that came from shortly, but the difficulty is that the NHS holds information that, okay, now is being ransomed. Once they have control of these machines, for example, if this was a more targeted attack, they could steal that information, and that's our most personal information. We share everything with the NHS. They know everything about us, and the opportunity for blackmail are huge. Also, they could literally kill people. If this was terrorists who weren't interested in making $300 a pop, but instead wanted to kill people, all they would have to do is go in and change some of that data. Someone's allergy profile, for example, everybody's allergy profile. And then someone is admitted to hospital, they're given an antibiotic or something that they can't tolerate, and they're dead. And it's a very effective way of killing people.
And we are what you're saying is that we are trusting the people who've done this, and we'll get onto that subject in a little while too, and the way that it was deployed. We are trusting them just simply to barter, or, you know, financially with bitcoins or dollars or whatever they want. They want bitcoins, actually. You know, they want money. They're not interested in playing those sorts of games, but we're trusting them to do that.
Look, you can't trust these people, because at the minimum they're blackmailers and extortionists, and who knows what else they are. And this is not necessarily one homogeneous group. Okay, this is just one of a number of miscreants out there that will try and leverage these vulnerabilities for their benefit. And there is nothing to say that although we're being asked for a ransom, that copies of this data haven't been taken. There's nothing to say that the data hasn't been amended, and now we're relying on the NHS having current backups of all this data. And of course they won't be fully current, because that data is updated throughout every day, 24 hours a day. So you know, best case scenario is that we lose 24 hours of data, but I would bet my boots in many cases we'll lose a lot more than that.
Well, we don't and can't can't get into political issues. However, the NHS is a big issue for people in this country, and I have had a certain amount, as you know, I think, Febzy, a certain amount of involvement with the NHS over this last 6 or 9 months. And whenever I've gone in, I have seen people in white coats, obviously working on the maintenance side, wheeling down the corridors, trolleys full of what looked to me to be well out of date computers. I mean, very good computers in their time. I've even used some of these, but I can remember using them at work 10 years ago. And it seems to me some of these computers are still in use.
Yeah, and it's not just a matter of the individual terminals, you know, the Windows terminals that they're using to access data, because, I mean, it's not that they're holding a lot of that information on that particular machine. Those machines are attached to a server, but these servers, the old versions of the software for the servers, carry the same vulnerabilities and therefore, you know, really need to be updated. I think There is a pact that we make as citizens with our government and our healthcare system. And this is this: we will share everything with you because you need to know about us in order to help us, to treat us, to save our lives. But implicit in that, absolutely at the heart of that, is that you must do everything that you can reasonably do to keep our information safe. And clearly that has not been done. If a bank can update its system, so can the NHS. Yes, it will cost money, but what will this cost, and how many lives may it cost?
Well, of course, that is something that we don't have any NHS trust bosses or anybody from the government on here, so there is another side to that. And that other side to it is that you know, any of us, whether we're private citizens or big organizations, look at Renault, the car company, Nissan, I think, in the northeast of England, they've been affected too. So anybody can walk into this. Let's walk through the chronology then of how this thing was deployed, because it seemed to hit everywhere at the same time. Of course, some people are going to go to work tomorrow, turn on the computers, they might find it there. But why did it hit in the same way around the same time?
Okay, so the answer to this is not fully known. Some researchers that are looking to it said that there have been multiple attack vectors. Now, an attack vector is how you inject that bad code into people's systems. One very traditional and common way has been to send it as an attachment on an email that people may open. They've use perhaps some degree of social engineering to trick people into opening those emails, even though we tell people do not open emails from people you don't know, and certainly don't click on the attachments, don't click on the links within it either. So that's all still good advice, but it wouldn't take much, because one of the things that they did with this particular piece of malware is they not only used a vulnerability in Microsoft's system, but they combined it with something called a worm. And a worm is something that once it infects one computer on a network, the worm will wake up and it will look on the network to find other machines that are equally not protected, and it will infect those machines as well. So it worms its way through the system, as it were. Probably there were multiple attack vectors. There were probably other ways in which systems were infected, and they were probably launched all at once. And that combined with the worm technology means that it would only have to penetrate a computer system at one point for many computers in that same network to be affected.
So does this mean it's a gift that keeps on giving, and we may see worse to come rather than actually watching it go away?
Okay, so with regard to this particular piece of malware, which is variously known as things like WannaCry, because it makes you want to cry.
And WannaDecryptor.
Yeah, same thing, or variants of the same thing. So with those make use of a particular vulnerability in Microsoft's operating system software. That's to say, a fault that a bad player, a bad actor can come in and take advantage of to usurp control of a system. Now, with regard to that, patches are available, and in fact, patches have been available since March from Microsoft, and as I say, the problem has been that there's been no auto patch for Microsoft XP at that time. There now is. Microsoft's taken the highly unusual step of producing a patch for operating systems that it ceased to support years ago because of the seriousness of what's happened. So that can be fixed. What people need to do is they need to update their systems, be they organizations or individuals. You want to make sure that you've done the Windows up update and you're fully updated, and if you're running the older version, Windows XP, there is still a patch available for you and you can still download it. So in terms of this particular vulnerability, yeah, it's solvable. I would say also we need to take one step back. So I've had a pop at the NHS and other large organizations that are not looking after our data properly. But it's interesting to understand where this vulnerability was first detected. It was, we believe, first detected by the NSA in America. And the NSA collects vulnerabilities like this so that it can use them to spy on individuals or groups of individuals. When it feels it's in their national interest to do so. The problem is, for that to be effective, it means that they don't tell Microsoft or whoever they need to tell that this vulnerability exists. So Microsoft is not tipped off and doesn't patch the problem. And you have to think about what the ethical situation with that is it ethical for an organization which is, government funded in America to hold on to this information? Because this is what can happen as a result. If they go to Microsoft, and maybe they did, but maybe they didn't, if they go to Microsoft and privately tell them this, then they can fix it. But of course, in the short term, it's not in the NSA's interest to patch for Microsoft to patch that problem, because they lose their advantage. But we have seen that data was stolen from the NSA and published back in April, and it was leaked online by a group called Shadow Brokers, which is believed by Western intelligence to be connected to Russia's spy agencies. By the way, it's not proven, but that's their belief. So again, how ethical is it for an organization to hold this sort of information and to create a weapon called Eternal Blue in this case? So they took the vulnerability, the NSA created Eternal Blue, this weapon that could inject it into people's computers, and then they allowed it to be stolen. So it's a bit like having nuclear weapons that you can't control. If you can't make sure your nukes are not stolen, then don't make nukes. And in the same way, if you can't protect your cyber weapons, then then perhaps we shouldn't have them.
More than 10 years ago, I did a program that I called The Threat to the Net. And I said that with the bad guys learning ever more about how to access vulnerabilities and how to access us directly, and as we more and more become dependent on this technology, there is going to be a threat to the entire internet that might ultimately render it unusable and unsafe. People laughed at me and they said, what are you doing a program like that for? You know, the good guys, the techies, will always find a solution to all things, and, you know, you're really worrying about nothing. It seems to me, and maybe I'm wrong again, that scenario is a possibility once more.
I think that scenario is pretty well upon us. You know, these things go in waves. It's a bit like antibiotics. We create antibiotics, we can do great things, and suddenly the viruses or the bacteria fight back, and we're back into the dark ages where we can't perform basic surgery. It's a similar thing. We've had this flourish of great activity and benefit as the internet has given us great riches, let's be honest, but now we're seeing the downside of becoming that dependent upon it, where you go to a hospital and they don't have any paper notes to look up anymore. They can't treat you anymore. They don't know who you are. They can't. You know, there were doctors on Friday passing around x-rays by photographing the x-rays on their smartphones and passing it around a table. That's how dependent we've become on that technology.
And have we got to the stage, Fevzi, where critical organizations like the NHS need to almost take a step back, as you say, and perhaps have their own intranet, not be on the internet, because being on the internet leads you to all sorts of vulnerabilities that you can walk straight into.
Well, I mean, the NHS has an intranet, but it also has access to the internet. Look, it's difficult. I'm minded of the fact that Israeli security services have taken large parts of their apparatus offline. They've just, you know, put it in a room. But it's also interesting to say that the NSA data that was stolen was on a system that was equally held offline, and still they managed to find a way to steal it. The thing is that there are no way, there isn't, you could, at best it's a war where, you know, each side, it's an arms race where each side tries to outdo the other, but I think this is with us for the foreseeable future, and you can expect power stations to be attacked, power grids to be attacked, NHS, our financial centres. They are attacked all the time. I think perhaps our NHS was weaker than it should have been for such a big and critical system.
Well, did I hear somebody say today, and maybe I have this wrong, that the NHS has to deal with 20 attacks or attempted attacks every day, and they can be from kids wearing bobble hats in their bedrooms to serious organized Eastern European crime players.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely true. And banks are attacked every day, and they don't announce it, but they are. And it's a problem. And yes, you can't protect against all of them, but I think that they've provided an open goal here, because they've been using very old operating system software and not paying for the patches. And that's just unforgivable, given the data that's being held about us and the criticality of the systems that they're running. It's not acceptable. So many NHS trusts, there was a report by Sky a couple, 2 or 3 years ago, and quite a number of NHS trusts spent zero on cybersecurity in a whole year.
It's a frightening thing. Just finally, one suggestion I heard made by an expert on Friday, not very long after all this happened, was that in fact the NHS is going to have to stop using intranets or the internet and get to a situation where each of us individually keeps our own medical record. Perhaps we have a memory stick that's updated every time we go to the doctor or have an operation or anything. And we carry our data with us, and wherever we go, that data, Star Trek style, is plugged into a portal, and then the medical person can see the latest on us. But beyond that, they can't, because it's too vulnerable.
I think the problem with that is always there's this balance between security and convenience, and that's not very convenient. The other thing is, if the NHS system is compromised, what's to stop there being a piece of software on there that just makes a copy as and when we come into the hospital and put our little memory sticks in or whatever it is? It's very difficult to secure against that. A secure system is only as secure as its weakest link. Once you make your data available to their system, your data is part of that system, at least for a period of time. And if that system has already been compromised, then that sort of solution is not really going to work.
Fevzi Turkalp, the Gadget Detective from GadgetDetective.com, thank you very much for doing this. If you're hearing this on the rebroadcast on Saturday, then other things may have happened between this conversation and then. This was recorded as you're hearing it on Sunday night in the show a couple of hours before transmission. Fevzi, thank you very much for helping me out.